this is on point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Okay, people, throw your shade, your Rotten Tomatoes, your media bias accusations at me if you dare. I do not care, because I am standing my ground on one of my most deeply held opinions, and it is this. Human drivers are terrible. Terrible. 5.2 million non-fatal crashes, 2.2 million injuries, 38,000 deaths in 2020 alone, according to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. And again, that was for 2020, when road traffic went down for a while because of the pandemic. Oh, and by the way, to the person who decided to take a high-speed right turn on a red while looking at her phone instead of looking at the crosswalk where my kiddo and I were legally crossing this morning on the way to school, you are terrible too. Takes heart, though. I mean, you're obviously not alone in your terribleness, because that kind of irresponsible behavior behind the wheel is everywhere. Which is why, for all my caution and skepticism about the massive power of big tech in our lives, there is one technology where I say, bring it on. Self-driving cars.
I would be shocked if we do not achieve full self-driving safer than a human this year. I would be shocked.
Tesla's Elon Musk there, of course, in a January earnings call, touting the major strides forward Tesla's autonomous mode has made. Musk predicting there that self-driving cars will be safer than human drivers, because the autonomous cars won't do things like text while driving. Lady, this morning as we were crossing the street, get road rage. They won't fall asleep or do generally illegal things like rolling through stop signs. Right, Rebecca? Right? I mean, Tesla's self-driving mode would never ever do anything deliberately illegal on the road. Right, Rebecca?
Not quite right, unfortunately.
Oh, no.
So earlier this year, Tesla actually had a recall over a feature for rolling stop signs. So basically what happened is people who had a specific version of Tesla software, the beta version of its full self-driving system, if they met several conditions, including having a certain setting turned on, already traveling pretty slowly, not, you know, the system not detecting any other moving cars and or pedestrians, the system would decide to not come to a complete stop and roll past a stop sign, unfortunately.
Known as some parts of this country as the California stop, like where I grew up. Look, okay, so this is Rebecca Heilwild. She's a reporter for Vox. She covers emerging technologies, artificial intelligence, and logistics, and she's with us from New York. And I honestly have been waiting years to have that on-air freak out about human drivers and how I'm hoping that self-driving cars will be better. But what you're saying, Rebecca, is that Tesla deliberately sent an update, right? An over-the-air update of their beta full driving mode.
So Tesla has this software that it's continuously updating. Okay. And sort of working on. It's the beta version of this full self-driving software. It's only available to certain drivers, but basically what happened is one version of this software created a setting that people could set such that their cars would deliberately roll past stop signs. So that's how that happened.
Okay. There's three modes to this full self-driving mode, right? And was this the rolling through stop signs? Was it only on the most assertive mode they had?
It seems so. So what the main agency that sort of keeps track of recalls said is that, you know, you have to have that functionality set up on the full self-driving beta software. So it's not necessary that every single person who had this software downloaded would automatically have this happen to their cars. There were a lot of the kind of preconditions that would make that happen.
Mm-hmm. And this led to a recall of 54,000 Tesla vehicles because of this deliberate programming decision that in one of the self-driving modes, at least, the car, if it judged things to be quote-unquote safe, would not fully come to a complete stop at a stop sign. So that look, it might seem like a minor thing, but to me and to, you know, observers of the development of autonomous vehicle technology, it's not a minor thing because it comes down to the decision. A deliberate decision was made to allow this. So do we know why Tesla put that feature in?
So I will say that Elon Musk said on Twitter that this seemed perfectly fine to him. And he sort of said it was okay because it was going very, very slowly. The system wasn't set up to roll past stop signs at 65 miles an hour. And it's worth noting that that probably mimics the way a lot of human drivers behave. Like you said, you know, not everyone does actually come to that full complete stop that you're supposed to do when you reach a stop sign. So it seems like it was kind of mimicking the way humans already drive. And it sort of raises the question, should these programs be literally programmed to follow the law, which maybe doesn't speak to every single driving scenario someone might be in, or should they drive the way a human might drive, you know, raises questions yeah. about how we should be dealing with this.
You know where I stand on that one, Rebecca. Right. This is exactly why we're having this hour, right? Because people are making decisions. They're making decisions about how to program what I think is going to be an extremely important technology in the near future for all of us here. So we're going to come back to the sort of rolling stop debacle in a second. But this recall wasn't the only one that Tesla has, let me say, it was not the only recent incident that Tesla has experienced, right? Can you tell us about some other recent ones?
So we're sort of in a wave of Tesla recalls over the past few months. So it's worth noting that when you hear the term recall, you might think of, you know, getting a new car or having to go to get a part replaced or something like that. But with Tesla and also some of the other companies that are diving into these sort of more advanced technologies, recall often means a software update. So just like updating an app on your phone that happens over the internet. So this was the rolling stop issue was part of this wave, and there have been other concerns about software that Tesla has released. These include software that allowed people to set their cars to make fart noises, which maybe seems more silly, but some people thought was a safety issue, and also a recall over an issue with phantom braking, which is, you know, when your car brakes when it really shouldn't. So this is really part of a broader trend with Tesla, but just, you know, raising the question of when we have this software being released, who should be looking at it, who should be analyzing it, and what should that software be allowed to do and not do?
I respect that you're a serious reporter, Rebecca, but you just had to say the words that the car was programmed to make fart noises.
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
So it's just a feature that was sort of part of Tesla. I think it was a Tesla software. I think it was supposed to be fun, but it was not fun, according to some regulators. But, you know, there was also concerns. This didn't actually go to a recall, but, you know, it was concerning that Tesla had released one version of its cars that allowed people to play video games in the front screen while they were driving, and that had to be changed. There was concern that you should not be able to do that while driving. So, you know, it's worth noting some of this stuff doesn't really have to do with, you know, increasing self-driving abilities or more autonomy inside vehicles. It just has to do with the ease of just changing cars around when they're run by software rather than, mechanical parts.
Yeah. I will move on from the flatulence issue in just a second here. But the point is if I'm reading this correctly, that this was a feature in 500,000 Tesla vehicles in the U.S. due to its boombox feature, that in 2020 there was this update. And the boombox feature allows drivers to play preset or custom sounds from an external speaker on the car, right, while the vehicle is moving. And the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration was concerned that feature might hinder a pedestrian's ability outside of the car to hear mandatory warning sounds. So,
I mean, ha-ha, fart noises, but there was obviously a safety right. issue there. And wait, can you tell me also a little bit more about the phantom braking? That sounds concerning as well.
Right. So this has been, it seems like, somewhat of an ongoing issue with Tesla software. So last year, there was a recall related to phantom braking, and a version of the autopilot software, you know, supposed to be fixed with the recall. But there was a recent report from the Washington Post that basically outlined that some people are still having issues with this. And this is now something that NHSTA is investigating. That's the agency that sort of looks over all these recalls. So we'll have to see whether they issue a recall or whether Tesla announces some new software update to deal with that.
Okay. So sort of how and why decisions get made. Some of these don't have to do necessarily with the autonomous features on Tesla, but more broadly on autonomous driving software. We're going to get into that more deeply. But can you tell me, Rebecca, just quickly, we have about 30 seconds before our first break here. When it comes to these kinds of feature updates that are software updates, they're not hardware updates necessarily, what's the regulatory system that Tesla or other vehicle manufacturers have to go through in order to make those changes?
So there are federal laws that regulate, you know, the safety of vehicles, but there's no federal agency that, you know, looks over software before it gets released to the companies, like including Tesla, can release that software if that software ends up being dangerous or seems to go beyond, you know, the safety limits that, you know, Congress has said the Department of Transportation should uphold, then there has to be a recall potentially. So that's where we're at.
Okay, so that's a key point here. Rebecca Heilweil, reporter for Vox, who covers emerging technologies, artificial intelligence, and logistics. Hang on here for just a minute. I still haven't quite calmed down from my desire to have autonomous vehicles be as safe as possible, but clearly there's a ways to go before we get there. Now, how do we get there when some bad decisions have been made by companies like Tesla recently? We'll talk about that when we come back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're talking about the major strides forward that self-driving vehicle technology has made recently, but also the problems when it comes to the decisions that are programmed into the car, such as Tesla's decision not that long ago to allow, on one of its self-driving modes at least, for cars to roll through stops and not come to a complete stop. Well, federal safety regulators did not like that and required Tesla to recall or update the software and remove that feature in more than 50,000 vehicles. So I'm joined today by Rebecca Heilweil. She's reporter for Vox, covers emerging technologies, artificial intelligence, and logistics. And joining us now is Matthew Johnson Robertson from Pittsburgh. He's director of the Robotic Institute and professor of robotics at Carnegie Mellon University and former co-director of the Ford Center for Autonomous Vehicles at the University of Michigan. Matthew Johnson Robertson, welcome.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
I want to first just jump straight to something that a listener sent us, if I could. Bob Ziegler says, 4 years ago, I was assured by an autonomous vehicle engineer that my skepticism about AVs was outdated. Today, it's obvious they still aren't ready for prime time. Are they safer than human-driven cars? And Bob says, more than likely. But that doesn't mean they are close to perfect. Matthew Johnson Robertson, is that the standard we should be holding AV technology to before they're unleashed on humanity?
Well, it certainly seems like we shouldn't be making things that are more dangerous than human beings and releasing them on the public. That seems like a bad idea to me. But in terms of this idea of whether they're better or worse than humans, I think it's a complicated issue. You know, as bad as the drivers are that you describe, and as we know, you know, people text and they drive drunk and they do all kinds of things that are bad. Humans on whole are actually pretty safe in some ways, right? So we're really down to less than or around one fatality per 100 million vehicle miles traveled, which is actually quite few. And the reason why we have so many auto fatalities is we actually drive a lot, like an immense amount. So 100 million miles is more than you'll drive in your life or your whole family will drive in their lives probably. And so, you know, in some ways, humans are good. Now, the problem is that we know that it's not uniformly distributed. So young drivers, much older drivers, impaired drivers, distracted drivers, they all do much worse than that. But in a world where we replace everybody with robots today, it would be a very kind of high bar we'd have to hit to make sure that we are safer than everyone.
Okay.
On average.
Safer than everyone on average. But that's what Elon Musk was saying in that January earnings call. He was like, he thought very soon that at least Tesla's full self-driving mode, it would be safer than human drivers.
I have seen little data to indicate that that appears to be true, but we'll see. But if you watch a lot of the sort of videos of how these systems work, and I've driven a few myself, it seems like we have a fairly long way to go. And I think this gets at one of the challenges. Calling it full self-driving and sort of the way it has been marketed makes it very difficult, I think, for the public to understand exactly what that system is doing. And I think probably a more fair way to think of it is a very advanced driver assistance system. And in that respect, it's quite good. It's a very powerful and probably one of the leading driver assistance systems. But the idea that you're going to be asleep in the back and it's going to take you to work is, I think, still a ways off.
But people are already behaving that way, though. I mean, like, it wasn't that long ago that I think it was in a Tesla where and Rebecca, actually, maybe you can help me out here, where there was a test going on. The driver was behind the wheel and the car hit a cyclist and killed the cyclist. And I think later we found that the driver who was testing the self-driving mode was like watching Harry Potter on her phone or something. Does that ring a bell?
There was an Uber accident.
It was an Uber accident, a self-driving Uber test though, right? Matthew?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off, Rebecca. But yeah, it was an Uber ATG vehicle that was driving around in Arizona and it struck and killed a woman on a bicycle.
That's it. Rebecca, but go ahead.
I was going to say that there have been other incidents, and sometimes we see this with people who test the Tesla software and then post videos on YouTube of people who basically try to trick their Teslas into the Tesla thinking that they're sitting behind the wheel, but then they're not actually doing that or they're doing something else. And this is sort of like stunty approach to Tesla where people will just kind of use the cars as self-driving cars, even though they shouldn't really be used that way at this point, and then try to post the videos online to sort of get attention. So there have definitely been a couple incidents like that.
Oh my God, life is not an episode of Jackass. This is not a joke, people. I mean, if you really want this technology to succeed, treat it seriously now in the a critical development stage. Okay. This is going to be the hour where people like email me and they say, Meghna, just like all we heard all hour was your opinions about this technology. But I want it to work. So Rebecca and Matthew, hang on here for just a second, because both of you mentioned, you know, drivers posting YouTube videos about how their autonomous or somewhat autonomous vehicle functions work in real life. So we actually reached out to John Burnell. He's a former Tesla employee who spent a year and a half data annotating and training Tesla's full self-driving beta software. So he trained the software while working at Tesla. And since Christmas Day in 2020, he's driven a Tesla Model 3 long range. Now, John left the company last month, and since then he has been focusing on his YouTube channel. It's called AI Addict, where he posts videos of the full self-driving beta software in action.
Hey YouTube, AI Addict here. Welcome to another FSD beta video. Today we are on 10.10 in downtown San Jose for another downtown stress test. I'm so sorry you guys haven't seen us here in a while.
It's very exciting to have access to that software and I love it, but I would have to say it's definitely a lot more nerve-wracking to be driving a self-driving vehicle than it is to just drive yourself. Sometimes you might drive the vehicle and it might be a flawless drive. I might drive 30, 40 miles and never give it a disengagement. And I might go through very complex situations like construction, mountain windy roads, intersections, etc. But then at the same time, you might drive that same route again and you might have maybe 10 or 20 disengagements. So you never know if the same route will always be good. And that's what makes it nervous, because it does sometimes just jerk the wheel to the right and you have to be there holding the wheel and paying attention to take over, because it is a beta after all.
And there is a UPS truck in front of us, so this should be interesting to see what happens. The car, I am taking over. I'm trying. All right, there we go. Yeah, I don't know why it wanted me to take over immediately, because it should be programmed to know to go around a UPS truck.
As a human, you would kind of go over a lane line just smooth and make it a better driving experience. The Tesla doesn't do that to a dime. And it's one of those things that sometimes you don't have to disengage because it figures it out in milliseconds. But then sometimes it can be very jerky because it's maybe taking a second or two to decide what to do. However, from me testing it, it's amazing how in 1 year they brought a software that was just barely functional, but just like half there to like almost there now. Just they need to figure out some edge cases. When you're on freeways, I trust the system with my life. When you're in suburb areas, I'd say we're 90% there. It's pretty much solved. However, when we get to the downtown city areas, that's where I had some very interesting situations.
Now here we are back at the right-hand turn where we saw those pedestrians I had to take over last time for. And it tried to go down the actual railroad track on the right there.
I had it go down railroad tracks. I've had it almost go into some pedestrians who were jaywalking.
I've never seen it come that close to a pedestrian.
Yeah, a pedestrian. Like a pedestrian and the railroad tracks now. I'm not going to comment.
And I unfortunately also had a collision, a very minor collision with a plastic bollard in San Jose, where I was making a right-hand turn and the car overcorrected into a bollard protecting a bike lane.
We hit that.
We actually hit it.
We hit it.
Wow.
But luckily there was no people there and there was no damage to the vehicle or to the city property.
I hit the brakes to the floor.
Yeah. Wow. I can't believe the car didn't stop.
So yeah, so we did hit the pylon. You can see the mark right here at the bottom.
This technology is very advanced. It's saving people's lives in real time. It's even saved my life a few times in real life. It was maybe like midnight. I'm driving in San Jose, trying to get some in and out. I was hungry, you know? And it's a left-hand turn lane. There's two turn lanes going left, and I'm in the inner left one. The light turns yellow, and I have a Tesla, so I'm not gonna lie. I can accelerate through the yellows pretty easily. So I do just that, but the car that was on the outer turn was a little bit ahead of me, and they didn't think I would make the light, so they blatantly just cut into my lane and cut me off, not thinking I was gonna run it. And the Tesla subconscious autopilot kicked in, slammed the brakes before I could even take my foot off the gas pedal. The average person would have no idea I was on full self-driving in most of my videos, but I do not believe this is anywhere close to safe for an average consumer to get. It takes a lot of mediation and concentration to make the software function appropriately. And that is why it's beta. And that's why they give it out to select people. So that way, when it is ready, the public can get it.
John Brunell, he tests Tesla's full self-driving beta software. And you can see those tests on his YouTube channel, AI Addict. And as well, he's a former Tesla employee. Now, Rebecca Halwell at Vox, just so that we have a common set of facts on the table, you mentioned this a little earlier, but I'm wondering if we can just repeat it here. What is the difference, the importance difference between Tesla's full self-driving beta and what we might imagine to be a truly autonomous driving or truly self-driving vehicle.
So the big difference is that it does not do what a self-driving car should do. You need to be set up to be driving. You're supposed to be paying attention. Cannot be sitting in the back seat. It is really not a self-driving car. It really is just a very form of it's basically an advanced driver assistance system, as was said, and it's in beta, which means that it's still being tested, and basically drivers who have this software are testing it on the roads right now.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, and I wanted to repeat it because when we keep saying Tesla's full self-driving mode, it can be, the language can be a little misleading, so I just wanted to have you remind folks here. But, you know, beta, we know at least there's 50,000 cars out there that have that beta, so it's not a small number. Now, Matthew Johnson Robertson, this gets us back to the core question of the hour, and that is, you know, going back to the rolling stop debacle with Tesla's FSD. First of all, can you... what would be the justification for the conscious choice to allow a car to do that?
Well, I can't speak to why they would have chosen to do that. I assume it's that it makes the experience a little bit smoother from the driver's perspective. But I think it speaks to some challenges in the way that the kind of amount of safety oversight that's being exercised with some of these features. You're kind of already highlighted the naming challenges, calling it full self-driving when it's really driver assist. And then rolling out a feature that is illegal on its face seems like a choice that I wouldn't have made. But, you know, I guess it's a free market, so everybody's doing their own thing.
Okay, but you just said that it might have – I understand we're speculating here because none of us work for Tesla. But that sort of the driver experience is a major part of what matters, right? Or the person, the humans inside the car, their experience matters. So talk to me a little bit more then about – broadly speaking, what engineers, what programmers are thinking about when they make the decisions on what to allow a car to do, what to allow it not to do, et cetera?
Well, that's a really good question. So if you think about what Tesla is, right, they're a car company and they want to sell cars. And so they are trying to improve the experience for the driver, right? Because that's the person, that's their customer. If you're a self-driving car company, which would be something different than sort of what Tesla is doing, your interest is in, you know, making sure that the riders have a good experience. But probably most importantly, you're interested in making sure you don't have any safety incidents that would take you all your vehicles off the road. And so I think what we kind of see with the rolling stop is obviously that would be something that as a driver, some people would prefer. But as a public or as sort of like a society or from a safety perspective, there's a reason people don't want us to do rolling stops. It's because they're less safe than full stops, right? And so I think you see the tension in between a tech company that wants to sell cars and a public that wants to not die.
So, I mean, from your perspective, though, you're a robotics expert. You used to co-direct Ford's Center for Autonomous Vehicles at the University of Michigan. I mean, in an ideal world, what would you have a baseline for autonomous vehicle programming to be? Would it be, there is no question, the cars have to follow the law, whatever, you know, whatever the rules of the road are, wherever that car is?
No, really the kind of prime directive when it comes to designing the systems is to preserve the safety of the lives of the people in the car and people outside the car. And so there are a bunch of scenarios in which violating a road rule actually makes everyone safer. Good examples are if, you know, somebody were to pull into your lane, you know, driving the wrong way down the road, violating the double yellow lines to get out of the way to prevent, you know, you from getting hit is a totally reasonable action to take. So, you know, it's not that you want to kind of obey these things like dogma, but I do think I struggle to see a safety benefit from rolling stops. That seems like a convenience feature as opposed to something that would in some way enhance the safety of the experience for anyone. So I think that's an example of perhaps not fully appreciating the consequences of sort of these type of decisions on a larger system beyond just the driver that's in that car.
By the way, I see your prime directive and I raise you a Kobayashi Maru, Matthew. But to your point about that there are scenarios in which decisions that deliberately break the law will have to be made. When we come back from the break, which is coming up here, I want to talk with both you and Rebecca about how do we create sort of a programming and regulatory atmosphere that can balance these different needs that we're all talking about here in the effort to make self-driving cars as safe as possible. So Matthew Johnson Robertson and Rebecca Heilwell, stand by for just a moment. We'll be right back. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Just want to let you know that tomorrow we're going to be returning to our coverage of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, and we're going to be talking specifically about what's happening inside of Russia right now with the Russian people. And so we want to hear from you. Do you have friends or family who are in Russia? What are they saying about their views of Putin's invasion of Ukraine? If you're in Russia yourself, what do you think? What have you been doing? What have you been seeing from and hearing from media reports as they are in Russia right now? So anyone who has connections to the Russian people and wants to let us know what's happening in the country and what the Russians themselves think about the Ukraine invasion of Ukraine, call us at 617-353-0683. That's 617-353-0683. That's what we'll be talking about tomorrow. Today, we're taking a close look at where we are regarding the development of technology around autonomous vehicles and asking the bigger question about the decision making that goes into the programming end of the vehicle and what that means when those vehicles perform out on the streets and whether or not there needs to be a different kind, a new kind of regulatory structure around that. I'm joined by Rebecca Heilwell. She's a reporter for Vox, covers emerging technologies, artificial intelligence, and logistics. And Matthew Johnson Robertson is with us as well. He's director of the Robotic Institute and a professor of robotics at Carnegie Mellon University. And Rebecca and Matthew have been getting just a ton of comments here. Everything from Kent Elliott, who says, all I know is I love driving. Sitting around letting someone or something else do the driving is some kind of vision of hell. Whereas Vale Ryan says the technology has to be perfected to the greatest degree possible before unleashing it on the roads. We've also heard from listeners in, say, Austin, Texas. This is Baby Peyote, who says he thinks automated vehicles could be one of the greatest technologies ever developed.
I think it would reduce the amount of accidents and incidents that would happen. I believe that there would be a less likelihood of the vehicle being drunk, there's a less likelihood of the vehicle being high, there's a less likelihood of the vehicle having mental health problems or going through a bad divorce. I think that it will improve the efficiency and effectiveness of our driving patterns.
That's Baby Peyote from Austin, Texas. Over in Los Angeles, here's what On Point listener Brian Curtis has to say.
I see multiple times a day in my commute a guy, and it's always a guy, in a Tesla, letting the car drive itself in heavy rush hour traffic while he stares at his phone and pays no attention to what's going on outside. And I don't feel comfortable with that.
Brian Curtis, sounding like he's behind the wheel, or at least in his car in Los Angeles. Rebecca Hilwell, I can't let what Brian said go. I know we're focusing a lot on Tesla, and it's obviously not the only company by far that's developing autonomous vehicle technology. But some of the things we've been talking about that Tesla does or has done, they're kind of bro-y. I mean, is that... I'm asking this in all seriousness. Is that part of the problem?
I think that there's a challenge where there's this conversation happening about how autonomous vehicles should be. At the same time, Tesla, perhaps in particular Tesla, is releasing features that, again, seem to be fun, funny, or just, you know, catering to their community of drivers, but not necessarily thinking about, you know, what the ideal of an autonomous vehicle should be. I will say, you know, I've met Tesla owners who are not young men. A lot of different people buy Teslas, but I think that they're is a tension between who Tesla, you know, like what's been said earlier, who Tesla's trying to cater to and the broader community of people who aren't just driving these cars, but also the people who would be impacted by the kind of decisions these cars make.
Yeah, so that's a good point. And Matthew, the reason why I raised it and used the sort of deliberately provocative term of bro-y is that with everything regarding technology, you know, we know that the people making the decisions about what goes into the programming, it really, really matters. And when human beings themselves are holding onto the wheel and they're behind the wheel of a car, obviously the human decision making matters. And we have a whole regulatory structure, we have a whole legal structure around that to try and control or at least force human decision making down the safest, most effective path possible, right? So do we have anywhere near that same regulatory and legal structure to encourage or force the human decision-making in programming for autonomous vehicles down the safest path possible?
Look, it's advancing, but only hasn't caught up to where the technology is. And this is sort of a challenge with regulation for new technology. You know, we really haven't gotten to the point where autonomous vehicles are so widespread that the government or states have really looked at where the technology is and what they need to do to regulate it. I mean, to date, it's really been about regulation that enables testing, and that's been the primary driver. They want to make sure that there's sort of a regulation in place that allows companies to try to develop this technology. And just as a function of where the technology is, we're sort of still in that phase. The regulation is around testing because the regulation really, and probably the reality is we're still not there, right? We don't have a system that is ready to let someone sleep in the back of their car yet. And until we get there, I think regulation is not going to be the impediment. It's going to be accidents or mistakes or things that happen along the way that derail this. And I'm really hopeful. I'm a big booster for this technology, and I want it to be successful because I do think it could be life-changing.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as you, Matthew. I want it to be successful, but I'm concerned that right now we're not setting up the development process for that ultimate success because, you know, as Rebecca told us earlier, for example, when Tesla sent out that update for FSD to have the assertive mode roll through stops, it doesn't sound like that had to go through any kind of oversight or regulatory review before the update was sent out. I mean, is that right, Matthew?
I think that's happening, yeah. And I think this shows the disconnect in what's happened in the change in cars, right? Cars used to be primarily mechanical devices with some electronic systems to do things. And now they really are computers on wheels. And almost every system in the car is controlled by a computer. And this is why the chip shortage has been such a big impact on us being able to get cars through the supply chain. But ultimately, it means that every subsystem of the vehicle is really controlled by software. And that means it can be changed. And so I do think we're going to need to see a rethinking of the way that we think about regulation, not only for vehicle technology, but really for anything, right? From airbags to seat belts, because all of that is software controlled at this point.
So that sounds like an urgent need, right? Because it's all software controlled, and specifically regarding driving, we are going to see more and more of driver assist at the very least, if not, you know, advancements toward more fully autonomous driving. Are the regulatory agencies, NHTSA, et cetera, right now set up to even say, well, if you're going to do an update, send it to us first. We'll get back to you on whether or not even, you know, this beta update can go out.
Yeah, I think the rules have been unclear, and I think that's been one of the big challenges. And so obviously with these beta updates, it has been something that I think they've been able to roll out without oversight. But then you see sort of this recall process. And so there is some oversight here, right? The agency saw this, didn't like what they saw, and then asked for it to be rolled back. So it's not as if the system is totally broken. I think it just is. It's a really big challenge. The question is that if you have 300, 400, a million lines of code that go into an update, it's not clear who would even be in a position to review that well, right, at this point. And it's an open challenge in software engineering as to how to think about this. Now, there are really some great best practices. There are some codes of conduct. There's lots of things that you can do, but it just reflects the complexities of our system these days. And you've seen airlines go through this with, you know, things like the Boeing planes and other vehicles that have had to be recalled. But, you know, there is a process. It's just we probably need to move to something closer to what they've been able to do as opposed to where we are right now.
Yeah, so that I totally hear you. But that gap between regulatory capacity and the development of new technology is worrisome because – and Rebecca, I'll turn to you here on this – because, you know, beta testing is you know, par for the course in the world of tech. That it's really the most efficient way to make advances as quickly as possible. But this isn't like, you know, the early days of beta testing Gmail. I mean, we're talking about transportation. We're talking about vehicles that are actually being beta tested on the road in real life. It may only be 50,000 Tesla drivers for Tesla specifically right now, but they're doing the testing on the streets of San Jose, as you heard a little earlier. So shouldn't we have a higher bar for what's being allowed to even be beta tested on the roads because of the, you know, the real life safety issues?
It's a challenge because the way the system is set up right now, it is not really built for that. I think with software run vehicles, there's a sort of two sides of a coin where on the one hand, because these cars are operated by software, it makes it really easy to do recalls. It means you don't have to bring your car back. You don't have to get a new vehicle. It means that basically everyone who gets issued the recall, which is what these software updates are called, will basically get it. There's no risk that someone's going to keep using a vehicle that doesn't have the updated software. So it potentially makes the recall process a lot more safe. But at the same time, it makes it very easy for a company to just sort of at will release whatever software they want. You know, obviously they're supposed to be meeting certain safety standards, but that there's no like pre-review process by the government. And then, you know, when the government eventually gets around to saying, no, you should not do that, recall it. They're like, okay, we'll recall it then. It's not, you know, that big of a lift for them. So I think that part of the problem just stems from the fact that the way the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration has been set up, the way Department of Transportation has been set up, it's just really not built for this. And we probably need to be thinking about this in an entirely different way.
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting that in so many different sectors over the past several years, tech, healthcare, finance, you name it, a constant theme in our shows is that the decrepit nature of American bureaucracy is part of the problem. Like, we need to modernize our bureaucracy to work better, modernize our government and governance to work better in the modern world that we live in. But here's On Point listener Deb from Chesapeake, Virginia. I want to get another listener in here who shared with us why she really wants autonomous vehicles to one day become an everyday technology.
I have a daughter who, when she was 18, was hit by a drunken drug driver and has optic nerve damage. So she will never be able to drive. Our only hope for her is for self-driving vehicles. So for people like this, it is very critical that these vehicles get made. I do have some concerns about them, but actually I have less concerns about computers driving than I do individuals driving.
Yeah, so Deb from Chesapeake, Virginia, they're making an excellent point. In the future, this could be life-changing technology for people who are otherwise unable to drive. I'm thinking, you know, our rapidly aging population, right? There are many people who the last thing they want to do is give up their ability to drive, but they're, you know, perhaps they themselves have a slower reaction time as they get older. Well, maybe a self-driving car could be quite a game changer for an aging population. But Matthew Johnson Robertson, as we move towards, hopefully, this more positive functional future for autonomous vehicles, I'm still thinking about what processes we need to change now to make the development as safe as possible. And we're relying on companies at the moment to act in good faith and not, you know, maliciously throw in updates that may or may not break the law. Well, one way to get companies to act in good faith is through liability. But who holds the liability right now if a self-driving vehicle or driver assist technology that's under beta fails and someone gets hurt?
So the way that Tesla's rolled out their features, at least from my understanding, is that they're stating that the liability is held by the driver, the operator of the vehicle. And the way our laws are set up, that really is sort of what they're set up to do, that there's a licensed driver, you know, you need a driver's license from your state, and then that sort of gives you the kind of right to operate a vehicle, but it also, you know, places the liability on something on you. There's sort of a more macro question here, right? That if a vehicle is shown to be to malfunction in some systematic way, right? Those are cases where liability can then be kind of passed back onto the manufacturer, right? So you can think about gas tanks that explode and you know, braking systems that fail in some systematic way. And we've seen sort of big class action lawsuits along those lines for vehicle manufacturers in the past. But with autonomous vehicle technology, we're in this kind of new zone. And so right now, the sort of easiest way to test them is say, well, the person behind the wheel is liable. But the question is, if we really get to the point where these are widespread, obviously that's going to have to change. Like if you're asleep and you're told by the vehicle manufacturer that you can be asleep, it would be very odd for you to be held responsible because your vehicle crashed while you were sleeping, if that was part of the way that it was designed.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're already in that more complex gray area, even with driver assist, right? Like what if, there's still supposed to be an actively participating human driver behind the wheel, but if the assist does something, for example, that maybe leads to a bad outcome? I mean, Rebecca, your thoughts on how sort of liability around autonomous vehicles needs to change?
I think one of the challenges is that we haven't kind of updated our definition of driving for these more advanced driver assistance technologies. So a lot of people have just zoned out. But, you know, I think about, you know, transitioning from a flip phone to an iPhone. It's not that the phone got better, but my behavior also changed in relationship to my phone. And I wonder whether the relationship that we have with cars needs to change, and our sense of responsibility as those cars make decisions need to change. And I think that's something we really need to work out. Like, it might be that the things you are doing as a driver are of a vehicle with these assistance features aren't necessarily what you expect right now. We have to sort of teach drivers to work with these vehicles and have higher standards for the drivers that have them.
That is such an excellent point. It's going to give me a lot to think about whether our relationship to the actual vehicles must change. Well, Rebecca Heilwell, reporter for Vox, who covers emerging technologies, artificial intelligence, and logistics. Thank you so much for joining us today, Rebecca.
Thanks for having me.
And Matthew Johnson Robertson, director of the Robotic Institute and a professor of robotics at Carnegie Mellon University, former co-director of the Ford Center for Autonomous Vehicles at the University of Michigan. It was wonderful to speak with you, Matthew. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and hey, drivers, stay safe out there. Please do not hit me as I try to cross the road with my kiddo. This is On Point.